Adam Steltzner is the landing lead for Curiosity Mars rover. Adam, thanks for joining us. A lot of us think about space travel as something that happens in the far future, you know, science fiction. We're freezing ourselves. We're using, you know, warp drives and improbability drives and things like that. Tell me a little bit about what's happening in the next decade.
In the next decade, we are looking to take more science instruments and hopefully start to take humans further away from Earth than we have before. So we'll be going back to Mars, looking to do more science on the surface to understand better whether life existed or still exists on the red planet. We'll be stretching out, hopefully, to Europa, one of the icy moons of Jupiter that we think might have life on it. And we'll be learning how astronauts can operate safely in deep space with a mission to mine or collect material from the surface of an asteroid.
Obviously, human space travel has gone through some big changes. But as the Curiosity rover has shown us, you know, a lot of what we can do in the near future is use other kinds of technologies and sensors and things like that and send them out into space to do our work for us.
Well, I think that there's a partnership between robotic space exploration and human space exploration. And typically, robots go to the place first. Robots are sort of much more expendable than human beings, and they're less cranky. They take less resources to keep them happy and healthy. And so they're the first visitors, but they're not the last visitors. And so we're looking at putting humans further and further from the Earth, first to asteroids, and then eventually, hopefully within a couple of decades or so, to the surface of Mars. And with those ambitions, the precursors will be robots, and then bigger robots, and then human missions.
What are the bigger robots? What are those robots that are going to be sort of larger and the precursors to a human mission?
Well, for instance, if you think about going to the surface of Mars, right now we put about a ton of weight, 1,000 kilograms, 220 some odd pounds of spacecraft on the surface of Mars. When you think about having a human on the surface of Mars, you're going to need to put a lot more mass down on the surface, but maybe it's 40 tons or 50 tons. We you know, aren't done designing that system yet. But in between, something that might be somewhere between 20 and 40 or 50 metric tons and our one-ton vehicle are probably robots that help us practice the techniques that we're going to use to get humans to the surface by getting larger robots. They may be robotic rocket fuel plants that we place down on the surface that can start to make rocket fuel for the rocket ships that are going to bring the humans back to Earth once we land them on the surface. So sort of rocket fuel production plants, you can imagine placing them down on the surface and making having them make rocket fuel for human return prior to ever sending the humans down there, because you want to make sure the humans have got a way back.
Why do you have to make rocket fuel on the surface of Mars for a return flight? Why can't you just take the extra with you when you head there?
So the reason we think we'll ultimately want to make rocket fuel on the surface of Mars for a return of human beings is that landing heavy stuff on the surface of Mars is difficult. And and so landing just bulk fuel for the eventual ascent is risky, expensive, and not the right way to go. We think that learning to make fuel from the atmosphere and rocky material that's there on Mars is the way to go. And so we there's a work at in NASA looking at techniques that we can use to produce rocket fuel from the in situ is the term people use, in situ resource utilization, the resources that are actually there.
Tell me about Europa. Why do we think that there might be life there? What's some of the technology that's going to get us there? And what is some of the technology that we're going to use once we get there to figure out if there really is life or there could be life or maybe some other scientific discoveries that could help us?
Europa intrigues scientists because we've flown by it previously and taken some images with the Galileo spacecraft and have noticed that we believe it has an ice crust, a rocky center, and then a liquid water ocean between the ice and the rocky center. We know from here on Earth that where there is water very frequently, almost all the time here on Earth, there's life. And so knowing that we have or suspecting that we have a large reservoir of liquid water in Europa, it leads the exobiologists. I'm not an exobiologist, but I drink beer with them, and they think that the evidence is encouraging that Europa might be a good bet for finding life in our solar system currently outside the Earth if life, in fact, is present in our solar system. And so how would we get there? We would get there using probably you either need to go – it's kind of like drag racing. Speed costs how fast do you want to go? We either need a very large rocket, like the space launch system, which is proposed and it's in on the books for development over the next several years in NASA. It's a very, very large standard technology rocket that could get us there to Europa maybe in 5 years. Or you use more traditional techniques and that will take you, let's say, 7 or 10 years to get out to Europa. Either way, when we get there, we're going to want to take images of the surface at very least, and we're working on an image on a mission that would do that. But ultimately, you're going to want to follow on any kind of surface, any kind of remote sensing of Europa with a surface mission.
Tell me what's going to happen to NASA in the next decade. There's this influx of private space exploration that's happening. And there's, you know, I don't know, the Dutch entrepreneur who wants to send people to Mars and actually just leave them there. And you've got, I guess, some competition, as it were. How is NASA going to fit in this space in the next 10 years?
Well, I think it's an exciting time in space exploration in general for our nation, maybe even the world, because of the influx of private organizations, entities wanting to get into space exploration. I welcome that. I think that's absolutely fantastic. Some people think of that influx of private energy as being competition. I welcome that. You know, our nation is made better, I believe, by competition. And so I also welcome that competition. In terms of the public investment, I think that public investment in space exploration is very important. And I think that that questions of investment aren't a question of NASA, they're a question for our country. You know, we are in tough fiscal times. I don't know whether that means we should hold our breath and do absolutely nothing until the books are balanced. I'm not even sure. I'm not an economist, but I'm not even sure if that makes economic sense. But I do know that exploring is something that's fundamentally human, and we've done it for thousands of years. And it is an expression of, in some sense, that which is the best in us. And I think when we explore, we become better as individuals, as a nation, and as a people. And so I am encouraged that we will not stop exploring, even when faced with the fiscal challenges that our nation is faced with. And the private investors are part of that, and public investment is definitely part of that. So I think it's an exciting time for NASA.
Adam Steltzner is at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. Adam, thank you.
Thanks very much for having me, Ben.